Welcome to the Betting Above the Rim podcast. Today's date is March 11th, episode 36 of our podcast. In today's podcast, we get into four topics. First, major injuries in the NBA. We'll talk about the implications of both Karl Anthony Towns and Bennedict Mathurin's injuries and how they impact both the Timberwolves and the Pacers. Next, we go to the college game and recap the big game between UNC and Duke. I'll talk about both teams a little bit, but then I'll give you which blue blood team do I think makes the biggest move in March in the NCAA tournament. Next, we'll go to the ladies game. We'll recap a wild weekend in the SEC tournament, which ended with a fight that took place between LSU and South Carolina. We'll talk about the game. We'll talk a little bit about the fight, but also the women's game overall. Well, let's reset what my thoughts are as we are in Champion Week. But in the women's game, a lot of these conference tournaments are done, are going to be close to being done by tomorrow. Lastly, I'll give you my all-time team for the Kentucky Wildcats. Let's get started in today's podcast with the injury news. First off, big news in the Western Conference, as Karl Anthony Towns is now out for the foreseeable future, hopefully to get back for the playoffs for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And this is a really devastating injury for a Minnesota Timberwolves team that going into this before he got hurt, this team was playing really good basketball. Now, Karl Anthony Towns, you got to talk about, folks, what he has meant to Minnesota this year. Karl Anthony Towns is scoring at 22.1 points per game, getting you 8.4 rebounds, getting you 3 assists, shooting it at 50% from the floor and 42% from three, really becoming one of the premier stretch fours in the NBA, a player at his size that could take you inside and out. And I would dare to say maybe one of the best shooting bigs that I've ever seen. And it kind of, it's been tough for Karl because he's had injury concerns in history. You remember last year was a calf injury, missed a whole lot of time. And a Minnesota team, folks, that really struggled last year with him and Rudy Gobert as the 4 and 5, but a team that has really played great basketball, folks. But now that you look at it, since him getting hurt on that game on March the 4th, this team has continued to slide a little bit. After their game March the 4th, they did beat Indiana on a big win on the road, 113-111. But now they've lost the last two games at Cleveland and at LA. And a team that going into Tuesday night, still the rest of the week, has the Clippers at Utah, two games in a row, Saturday and Monday. So when you look at this Minnesota Timberwolves team, what do we look to expect? Number one, we have to continue to hope that Anthony Edwards plays like an Anthony Edwards, who I have talked about on this podcast, is a top 10 player in the NBA, and I would dare say that the season he's had, he's going to be possibly top 5. They got to continue to get the play out of Rudy Gobert, someone that's overly favored to win Defensive Player of the Year. If you look at 4 of his last 5 games, he's averaging double figures and getting at least 14 rebounds a game. So Big Rudy is going to have to not only carry the defensive load, I would say, but also the ability to score a little bit, something that's not his forte, but he's a capable scorer. Next, you got to look at the wily veteran, right? The point guard and Mike Conley. And Mike's, you know, scoring at 10.5 points per game, 6.2 assists per game. And this is someone that also, folks, has injury concerns. So we have to see if he can stay healthy. Now, when you get to Minnesota, I think it's going to line up with a certain number, certain guys that are going to have to play critical roles. Number one is going to be Jaden McDaniels. Okay, Jaden McDaniels is one of the best defenders in the league. He's scoring at 10.5 points per game. They may need a little bit of an uptick in his scoring, and he only shoots at about 35% from three. They need McDaniels to kind of get going and maybe at times carry a little bit more of the offensive load. Next, Kyle Anderson, another kid, really quickly, 6.2 points per game, 4.1 assists, 3.5 rebounds. This guy's kind of like a junkyard dog here. But if you think about it, since that injury, which occurred during the Portland game, 29, 28, 35 minutes are the minutes that Kyle Anderson has played since that. And if you look at over the course of the year, he probably only has, I would say maybe, I'm just going to top my head, two or three games in which he played 30-plus minutes. So look out for Kyle Anderson. Maybe if you look at his props, folks, maybe look at maybe points, rebounds, assists, or rebounds and assists for a guy like Kyle Anderson who's really good at filling up the box score. So let's go on to the other side. And now let's talk about Benedict Mathurin, right? A Benedict Mathurin who I love coming into the NBA. Someone that I thought could be a proven scorer. And now this kind of hits an Indiana team at the wrong time with Benedict Mathurin getting hurt because of the fact that he was Benedict Mathurin, who was going to be out for the rest of the year, folks, with a torn labrum, had surgery. He was giving you 14.5 points per game, right? So when you start looking at Benedict Mathurin, what could he do? Like I said, he was a bucket. He could score. Now, listen, is he going to be a high percentage scorer? No, he's more of a volume guy, right? But you got to admit, from his rookie year to this year, right, even though his scoring's gone down a little bit, that's because all the scoring and all of this have gone up, Benedict Mathurin was shooting the ball better this year, and he was shooting the ball from three at 37.4% as compared to 32.3% last year. So they're going to miss that scoring, right? So when you start looking at Indiana and now the fact that Benedict Mathurin is out, now we have to start looking at, well, where are we going to get the scoring from? Well, number one, Tyrese Halliburton's got to play like a top 20 player in the NBA. And Kevin Walsh and I have talked about this and showed a little bit of a frustration, I would say, with Benedict Mathurin. Tyrese Halliburton, because of sometimes it's inconsistent play. And I think that is something that we're going to need him to score more, especially the fact that if you lose Mathurin, right, and you've traded Buddy Hield, that puts more pressure on other guys, right? A guy that you usually look at, Andrew Nembhard, who they play in this two-point guard system and really has done a nice job this year getting you 8.9 points per game, 4.2 assists, and he allows at times for them to move Tyrese Halliburton to a little bit more of a scoring load. But I think that's something that's going to be interesting. And then obviously, the big man in the middle, Miles Turner, right? You've turned around, you've got Pascal Siakam. But I've always felt that Miles Turner is one of the more underrated players in the NBA, 17.1 points per game, 7 rebounds per game. I think he's one of the best shot blocker / rim protectors, and he can give you games when he goes absolutely off. I remember there was a game a couple of weeks ago against Dallas when he gave you 33-8. Now, I'm not saying you need to get that out of Miles Turner, but you're going to have to get more consistent play as you lost a scorer that led your second team in Benedict Mathurin. Lastly, Pascal Siakam, relatively new to the team, obviously got traded a couple months ago. Pascal's going to have to start to ramp up his scoring load. But an Indiana Pacers team, folks, if you look at the schedule right now, the standings right now in the NBA, a Pacers team that right now has slid down to the 7th spot, and they are tied with Miami for 7-8, 4 games ahead of Chicago. So they should be in that conversation anywhere between, 4 where New York is and 8 where Miami is. And just really quickly, folks, just to kind of think about this, when you look at their strength of schedule, the rest of the way, a team like Indiana has the 4th toughest schedule in the Eastern Conference. Just keep that in mind as you look at this team towards the future. Let's move on to the college game and the matchup of all matchups. We always end the regular season in the ACC with Duke Carolina, right? They always flip-flop who hosts the second game, and there's been some legendary games between the two. But what a performance by North Carolina to go on the road and get a big 84-79 win versus Duke. And when you look at this game, there is a lot of different ways you can look at it. Okay? let's go to the losing side first, to Duke. I thought that Roach and Filipowski were very quiet early on in this game. I thought Kyle Filipowski really got going in the second half. But Roach kind of concerned me. 39 minutes, 3 of 12 from the floor. You know, this is the veteran. This is the point guard. This is the glue of the team. And Jeremy Roach, as a senior, has to put up more consistent games versus these type of opponents. So I know he had 13 points, but you can't get that on 12 shots, right? Look at the first game versus Duke. He did score 20. So maybe it's a little bit of a pass. Senior night, the senior out of Leesburg, Virginia, maybe it was a little too much for him, but they needed him. Now, Filipowski played pretty well. Obviously, Kyle did. But the one thing you want to talk about now is going to the flip side, is I thought that UNC did a really good job of attacking Filipowski, particularly in the second half. I thought Armando Bacot was just way too big. And even though he did not score the way you needed Armando to score, he still, because of his size and his presence, even though he shot 4 for 11, he makes it to be a problem down low. And that's what John Shire had to deal with. But to me, when you looked at this game and what Hubert Davis did, is especially in the second half, Cormac Ryan, Lord have mercy. The transfer from Notre Dame was absolutely fantastic in this game and what he did. And I just thought every time they needed a big shot, a big three, 6 of 8 from the floor for Cormac Ryan, I thought he absolutely delivered. And if you look at Carolina over the last 3 years, right? Brady Manick, PD Nance, Cormac Ryan. They now, Cormac Ryan's different than PD Nance and obviously Brady Manick because he's not a big, right? That's more of an Ingram thing. But I'm talking about a guy that can knock down perimeter shots. And he knocked down perimeter shots. And I want to also give my flowers really quick. And I know he didn't score a ton, but I have become a big, big fan of Harrison Ingram. Okay? 12.5 points per game, 9.3 rebounds. This guy at 6'7" plays well bigger than his height. And I just thought his aggressive nature on the boards and his ability at times to even take Filipowski off the bounce became critical. See, they took Filipowski off of Bacot and at times put him on Ingram, and then Ingram went to work. So I thought that Harrison Ingram was absolutely fantastic, and I think this is the reason why a Carolina team, I think, is going to be trending towards a number one seed. You heard this right, folks. If Carolina can find a way to win the ACC tournament, I don't care what the metrics say. The eye test, the coaching test tells me I'm taking that team as a one seed over Arizona and over Tennessee. But when you think about Blue Bloods, who do I think as a coach is a team that I think is the scariest and could be the one that can make the biggest move in the tournament? Folks, it's Kentucky. Why, you ask? Have you seen their guard play? Have you seen what Cal's been able to do when he has guys like Shepherd and Rob Dillingham on the bench? Do you see what he's able to do with all those plethora of guards? Like, sometimes as a coach, you get worried when you have too much of something. That's not the case with Cal, because he's got too much of something and he knows how to use it. And what a huge 85-81 win on the road at Tennessee. So I'm going to say this. When you can have Edwards, Wagner, Reeves, Mitchell, Shepherd, and Dillingham as your six guards, and you can play, and you can just rotate those guys in and out, and then find your three, the last 6 minutes of the game, they're playing the best. They have so much offensive firepower and the ability to score at the guard spot. See, when you get to the tournament, folks, you're scouted. Like, you're completely scouted, okay? And I don't care if it's the first round or second round of the tournament. When you go into a weekend of the NCAA tournament, folks, as a coach, you got three teams scouted. You got the team that you're playing scouted, and you got the two teams that you could play next scouted. So everybody knows what everybody runs at this point. You're not going to really change a lot for a team. But if you've got guys that can make shots, and you have guys that can create their own shots, that's what makes Kentucky so dangerous. And I think out of all these teams, I think the Kentucky Wildcats, out of all the Blue Bloods, I think they have the best chance to make a deep run in March, particularly if they were to stay away from Houston, UConn, and even Purdue, even though I think they could definitely take Purdue out. Let's move on to the women's game in a wild weekend in the SEC tournament that saw South Carolina escape the end of the game with the Cardoza 3. Kelly Harper, contest a shot, please. But then the finals between LSU and South Carolina. But before I get to this and talk about it, let's hear from Kim Mulkey and her thoughts what happened at the end of that game.
No one wants to be a part of that. No one wants to see that ugliness. But I can tell you this. I wish she would have pushed Angel Reese. Don't push a kid that you 6'8". Don't push somebody that little. That was uncalled for, in my opinion. Let those two girls that were jawing, let them go at it.
What a joke. I mean, what a joke. I mean, if you really think about this, folks, right? And so let's back up here. Let me explain to you what happened before I get into my comments. So there is a scrum in which Johnson and a couple of, from LSU, and a couple of, I guess you would say, South Carolina kids are jawing. Cardoza, the 6'8 center, comes and plows into Johnson, knocks her over, and a fight breaks out. Johnson's brother comes out of the stands and gets arrested, all right? But here is where I see a difference in teams. Let's look at Cardoza's statement, right? As she was disqualified and thrown out, she basically said, and she apologized, "I'd like to extend my sincerest apologies for my actions during today's game. My behavior was not representative of who I am as a person or of South Carolina program. I deeply regret any discomfort or inconvenience it may have caused. I take full responsibility for my actions." That is Cardoza. You have the head coach, Dawn Staley, apologize in her post-game news conference. What does LSU do? You heard Kim Mulkey's statement. And then you hear Andrew Reese saying, "Well, we're not scared of LSU." Why don't we hear that? And here's the thing. This is my concern, okay? These are two of the premier programs of women's basketball, right? Two teams that should be battling for a national championship. And instead of us talking about a great game, we're talking about the fight. But more importantly, we're talking about the comments that Kim Mulkey said. So what do you want, Kim Mulkey? You know Cardoza's suspended. So what do you want? You want Cardoza to go push Angel Reese? And Angel Reese get up and she gets suspended? Now you're best player? Or you want Haley Van Lift, who gave a nice little forearm shiver, by the way, to Cardoza after the fact? You want that to happen? That's what you want. So you want your players to get mixed up in something, especially your best player, your All-American, in a situation where she gets to a fight. Let's not talk about the fact that Angel Reese pulled on the poor girl's hair a couple of minutes before. And don't tell me that Angel didn't do that on purpose. So to me, my problem with LSU is it starts at the top. Kim Mulkey, I've talked to you about this before. I called you, you big dummy, for what transpired with Brittany Griner. I understand you couldn't get involved with Brittany with some of the things she may have said when she left Baylor. But I'm starting to hear some things, and I feel like there's a pattern of behavior, and I think there is more problems at LSU that's being let on. You have this situation last year with Caitlin Clark and obviously Angel Reese. With "You Can't See Me." Then you go into Angel Reese getting suspended. Katari Poole out of New York City leaving the team. Now you got this incident. And now you're telling your best player that they wish they would have pushed her. Some interesting things are going on at Baton Rouge. And they will be a two seed. They should make a run. And they're good enough to make a run and win a national championship. And every sense is this. South Carolina, folks, is not invincible. They're young. They've lost a bunch of players, right? Cardozo's the center. They're young at the guard spot. If you think South Carolina is going to run their way to a national championship undefeated, I got another thing to tell you. LSU can pick them off. Caitlin Clark, if she gets hot, she can pick them off. Don't sleep on Tennessee, which Kelly Harper's got such insane talent. If they can ever put it together, play together, they can make a run, right? And don't ever, even as bad as they've been at times, don't ever, ever sleep on Gino Auriemma and the UConn Huskies. They could put it together. They've been banged up. I get it. But they got Paige Beckers, who I think is one of the best, most complete players in the country. I think they can make a run. And don't sleep on the two young freshmen that we've talked about. Juju Watkins in USC, best ranking in the history of USC, right, in a while. And then obviously what Hannah Hidalgo has done and what she did to NC State in the ACC final. Don't sleep on those two teams. The women's tournament, folks, is going to be a lot more wide open than you think. Now, I talked to you about Blue Blood team that I thought was going to make the deepest run, which is Kentucky. So I think what better way to end today's podcast with my all-time Kentucky Wildcats team. A team that's rich in basketball tradition. And folks, this became so hard for me to do because you got to try and balance, like, guys that have been there a long time to Cal's one-and-done kids. And there's so many of Cal's one-and-done kids that I could have literally done a podcast. I could have done an all-time team on just them. But I decided to put it all together. And I honestly, folks, this was really, really tough. Let's bring in my bench for the Kentucky Wildcats. Antoine Walker, Jack Givens, Kenny Skywalker, Carl Anthony Towns, and DeMarcus Cousins. I start with Antoine Walker, guy that had the little shimmy shake, right? All region, one-time national champion, SEC tournament MVP, all SEC, 2 years at Kentucky, top 10 draft pick, had a really good NBA career. And Antoine Walker was one of those really first stretch fours you saw in the college game. Someone that was really good outside, sneaky good off the bounce, and really had a great stroke. Let's move on to Jack Givens, one-time national championship, won a national championship in 1978, two-time NCAA All-Region, All-American, 4 seasons at Kentucky, and arguably had one of the greatest performances in the history of the NCAA Finals, when I do believe in 1970, he scored 41 points, if I'm not mistaken, to lead Kentucky to a national championship. You may not know about Jack Givens. You may want to do your history. Next up, Kenny Skywalker, two-time SEC Player of the Year, two-time All-Region, two-time All-American, four-time All-SEC, 4 seasons at Kentucky, number 5 draft pick to my New York Knicks. And I'm not doing this because of New York fandom. But Kenny Skywalker was so electric and dynamic in college. Like, you got to realize that he was almost on par or even better than Charles Barkley when Charles Barkley was at Auburn. Now, don't say I'm talking about their NBA game. It wasn't even close. But Kenny Skywalker was fantastic. Also had some knee problems. Never really developed that jump shot. It could have made him a better NBA player. But an unbelievable player in the 80s for Kentucky. How about Carl Anthony Towns? Prior to St. Joe's Metuchen. All-American. 1 season at Kentucky. Number 1 draft pick. SEC rookie of the year. Carl Anthony Towns, like, folks, he's on his team and he scored 10.3 points per game, 6.7 rebounds, 2.3 blocks. That's how good Cat was. That's how good that whole team was. But Carl Anthony Towns was fantastic as a stretch for his 1 season at Kentucky. So my last member of the starting five, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins, 1 year at Kentucky, All-American, Player of the Year as a freshman, number 5 draft pick, All-Region, 15.1 points per game, 9.8 rebounds. Boogie Cousins, fantastic 1 year that he had for Cal and Kentucky. Now, let's get to my starting five for the Kentucky Wildcats. At the guards, Tony Delk, John Wall, Jamal Mashburn, Anthony Davis, and Dan Issel. And Tony Delk, one of the star guards of, ready folks, Rick Pitino's Kentucky Wildcats. Two-time All-Region, national champion, consensus All-American, three-time All-SEC, four seasons with Kentucky, number 16 overall draft pick in the 96 draft, and was the starting point guard for then, folks, remember, Tubby Smith took over for for Pitino, and he won the championship in 1996. At the other guard, John Wall, Mr. We know about John Wall, two-time SEC Player of the Year, All-Region, All-American, 1 year at Kentucky. Sorry, I should say one-time SEC Player of the Year. Number one overall draft pick in the 2010 NBA draft to Washington. And he was so dynamic in his 1 year at Kentucky, one of the first real big one-and-done guys for Cal. What an unbelievable year John Wall had. Next up, Jamal Mash, a.k.a. the Monster Mash. 92-93 SEC Player of the Year, two-time All-Region, All-American, SEC Tournament MVP, three seasons at Kentucky, number four overall pick in 1993 draft, and he was a Christian Laettner shot away from going to the Final Four, and I think they won a national championship. I'm going to tell you something, folks. Kids, if you have never watched it, go watch that game between Kentucky and Duke in the East Regional Final in Philadelphia. It's probably the best game I've ever seen in college. Next up, Anthony Davis, 1 year at Kentucky, All-Region, All-American. Number one pick, 2012 draft, NCAA champion. The Brow, man, he was something. And he was fantastic in his 1 year at Kentucky, averaging a double-double and 4.7 blocks per game as Cal finally got his national championship. And starting at center, Dan Issel, two-time All-American, three-time All-SEC, overall number one pick, three-time All-Region. I do believe the leading scorer in the history of Kentucky. Fabulous NBA career. We've already talked about his accomplishments. So really quick, my bench for the Kentucky Wildcats: Antoine Walker, Jack Gibbons, Kenny Skywalker, Karl Anthony Towns, DeMarcus Cousins, with a starting lineup of Tony Delk, John Wall, Jamal Mashburn, Anthony Davis, and Dan Issel. This has been episode 36 of your Betting Above the Rim podcast for all things sports gambling, pregame, in-game, postgame, props, predictions, and more. Just go and download that Sports Grid app, available on Apple and Google Play Store. Next podcast, episode 37, we'll film on Wednesday. We'll really get into the big major conference tournaments. We'll talk some bubble teams. There's a lot on the line this week. From our producer, Matt George, and Vinny does the graphics, this has been Coach Young. Thank you for listening to our podcast here on Sports Grid. Remember, folks, it's smarter to be on Sports Grid. Good night.